Halfway through the week, everybody, is Wednesday, July 10th. Steve Gell along with Charlie Long bringing you to the 8 o'clock hour this evening. Getting into some Saints talk right off the back. Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter, also WWL digital content producer, joining us for our training camp countdown. Jeff, just 14 days away from the first practice of camp. Are you an early packer, or are you kind of like a last-minute guy? We'll get everything ready, just throw it in the bag and take off for California.
Well, typically I'm a last second packer, but I feel like I have to do a little bit more planning when it's a like 26 day adventure out in California. You say 2 weeks, it's like I've been in my head, it's been so far away for so long, and I look up and like, oh my gosh, it's 2 weeks away. But yeah, I guess I should start thinking about that pretty soon.
Yeah, definitely going to be bringing not only a ton of clothes, but I know a bunch of gear with you as well. So that will be fun to lug around, I'm sure. I want to give a big shout out real quick. I forgot to mention all show right now. Happy birthday, Cam Jordan, 35 years old today, entering another season in black and gold. And saw him tweet the other day, looking forward to, you know, obviously training camp. Looking forward to a bounce back year from Cam. He dealt with a ton of injuries last season, definitely wasn't himself. And I think, you know, there's still enough gas left in that tank where I don't think he's someone that, you know, is washed as some people think and is ready to get into the coaching or broadcasting realm. I think still Cam's got something left in the tank to give this team.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking the other day that, you know, if you think you were frustrated with how Cam's season went,
right,
and some of the struggles he had and the lack of production and the just repeated injuries he played through him. He played all 17 games, but he was hurt basically the second half of the season, basically from that Falcons game on. You know, if you think you were frustrated by that, you can, you know, just imagine how frustrated Cam was. This is a guy who takes pride in being that consistent guy. Like, you look at his career and, you know, he's a potential Hall of Fame guy, not because he ever blew the doors off anyone, because he's always got that really high baseline of production. And he gets that through just consistency and always being there and putting in the work. And so he's going to be, you know, if you're looking at a 35-year-old guy and wondering, man, does he still get excited for training camp practices? Yes, he does. He looks forward to this. This is where he goes to have fun, right? This is his deal. So yeah, I'm sure he's very excited. I'm sure he's still counting the days until training camp. But yeah, I think he's eager to show that last year was not a sign that, okay, I'm done. This is kind of the downslope of my career. I still have good years in me. And I think he does.
Yeah, that's going to transition to something else I wanted to bring up. Obviously, you put the list together of Saints under pressure going into this season, which we talked about on the Inside Black and Gold podcast. Cam Jordan came in number 10 on the list. But looking at that top three, I think obviously some pretty big names there. And just to me, really spot on. Three with Marshawn Lattimore, two Derek Carr, and then number one, Trevor Penning, a guy that we are hoping to see something, anything from this coming season. And the Saints really, really need him to show up for them and be able to be a force on the field and produce at some kind of level, just because there are so many other questions along the O-line.
Yeah, and I kind of vacillated on whether, okay, do I put Derek Carr at the top because he's a quarterback and he's got a lot of pressure on him? I actually think, you know, the way last season ended should give some level of confidence that, hey, okay, I can be this guy, and people watching him should
totally
be like,
yeah,
hey, you can come back and be that same guy. So we'll see. But yeah, the biggest question going in, and, you know, Trevor Penning, it's not all on him. I think it's kind of he's a figurehead for what is just a very, you know, an offensive line just littered with questions and concerns, and he is the biggest question, the biggest concern, because, you know, I don't expect Ryan Ramczyk to play. You have a left tackle who's a rookie who's going to be playing a position that he didn't even play in college. So if you're going to help anybody, you're going to probably help the rookie. So not only do you have Trevor Penning shifting over to the right side and needing to show that he has something, right, that he can be a starting caliber offensive lineman, a starting caliber tackle, but it's not going to be a position where you can just, you know, throw the tight end over there, have the running back chip over there constantly, because you're going to have to be paying attention to the left side too. So, you know, in the sense that they need him to be consistent, they need him to not play like a rookie, because they are going to have to accommodate a rookie playing like a rookie across the other side. So I just think there's so much if you can't get a quality performance out of Trevor Penning, I don't know where you turn, first of all, whether it's Landon Young, maybe Ole Udo, one of these veterans. It's just going to create a scenario where you don't know what this offense can do because you never get to that point. I think the Clint Kubiak scheme should help. You know, you're going to be able to get these linemen out in space more. You're not going to be asking Trevor to block one-on-one all that often. He just needs to be able to hold up when you do, when you need him to do that. And so, and we'll see, you know, like one of the differences for this year is the excuses are gone. Like last year you looked at it and you said, hey, there's a guy who dealt with injuries his entire rookie season. He didn't have that, what I would consider a very important offseason going from year one to year two, where you kind of figure out what you have to do. And then you can really just home in on all of those things, fix the issues from your rookie season. He didn't get a chance to do that. So I'm kind of looking at this offseason as the opportunity for him to, you know, he has 5 weeks of tape that he can go over and correct mistakes. He obviously got through the season healthy. It's a lot easier to do that when you're not playing for the last 11 weeks. But either way, it's helpful to see him get through a season. So we'll find out. You know, I think training camp's going to be really important for him just to progress, just to create confidence that he can hold down that spot. Because if he can't, then it just throws everything into flux. So we'll see. But yeah, he's definitely top on that list. But we went through the top 15. So if you're interested in basically half the starters, we broke it all down.
Yeah, definitely check that out on Inside Black and Gold, folks. You should be subscribed anyway, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I am, but that's just because it's our podcast, right?
Looking at the rest of that O-line situation, Jeff, obviously Taliese Fuaga is going to be the left tackle for now. We'll see how that works out as well. But the guard position on that left side, a question mark as well. I know everyone expecting Nick Saldiveri to end up earning that role. But there could be, you know, one of the veterans they've brought in as well that ends up taking that spot.
Yeah, the question is who is it, right? And I don't know. Like, I think Nick getting all the reps with the ones in minicamp and obviously the OTAs is a very positive thing for him. I wouldn't, you know, take that bridge to the point of like, oh, they're looking at him to be the starter. I think those reps are very important for him. I think that's why he's getting them. I expect that to be a very interesting position battle to watch. Because you're going to go into the season, and I think you're going to get to a point where you're like, are we really going to start a rookie left tackle, and then throw a guy who's basically making his NFL debut? He did get some snaps last year, but no extended work at the guard spot. So I think you're going to get to a point where you're like, okay, we have a question mark at right tackle, we have a rookie at left tackle, and are we better off with a more consistent, you know, higher floor option at left guard? I think that's probably the question you're going to have to answer. But it's good to see him progressing, right? I think the concern would be you go into this offseason and you still don't feel confident that he can even compete for that spot. I think we've answered that question where they feel like he definitely can. And, you know, maybe his athleticism, he's an athletic guy, he's younger, he's got more spring in those knees. So maybe that helps him. Like I said, you're looking at a more athletic offensive line scheme and maybe that'll benefit him. But, yeah, I mean, it's just one of the many questions. You know, you have Eric McCoy, you have Cesar Ruiz, and then you have three giant question marks. So we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll hop to the defensive side of the ball here. And, I mean, we talked about Cam Jordan at the first question of this segment. But also, Chase Young is a really interesting piece on this defensive side of the ball. The fact that we got the good update of his recovery from his neck surgery and that he'll be ready to go for training camp and everything's positive on that front. But Mike and I talked about this earlier on the show. As far as Chase Young signing that one-year contract with the Saints, this is like his prove-it deal. He's still 25 years old. If he has a huge season with the Saints, it's kind of a low-risk, high-reward for the black and gold, because if Chase Young goes out and performs and reaches the double-digit sack mark and just explodes the season, he'll parlay that into a huge deal with maybe some other team, but you still get that production in 2024.
Yeah, the first question for Chase, you have to answer is, okay, when exactly does he get on the field? Ideally, it would be day one of camp, but I don't think that question's necessarily been answered yet. I'd be surprised if he's a full go on day one, but I'd hope to see him out there, if nothing else, working off to the side with trainers. But yeah, I mean, you know, the funny thing is Chase Young is kind of in the situation that Marcus Davenport was in last year when he left the Saints and went and signed that 1 year deal with the Vikings, right? That was very much a prove it deal. And the issue for Marcus is he didn't prove it, right? Like he was not productive. He was injured again. He did not have much of an impact on the field, and then he just kind of had to go sign whoever would take him, and I think that's why you ended up with the Lions and a familiar coaching staff who kind of knows him and knows what they can tease out of him. But, you know, with Chase, he's in a similar situation. He was also on our list of, you know, the Saints with the most pressure, but it's a different kind of pressure because I don't think it's roster pressure for the Saints, right? I think it's if he has a productive season with the Saints, that's gravy for the team in terms of, yeah, you're getting production on a guy who is not a long-term commitment and has that high upside. For him, the pressure is if I can't create a scenario where I can go out and sign a big contract off of this year, where am I? You're 25 years old. This is when you should be signing those lucrative, you know, second contracts where you make a big chunk of change and you have a long-term deal. That's the positive thing for the Saints is you're not questioning the motivation for Chase to go out and prove what he has. The only question is whether he can do that. And he's kind of fitting, and you have to figure out how he fits in to what I would consider to be, you know, a pretty, you know, loaded defensive end room. Obviously, there's been limited production from guys like Peyton Turner, Isaiah Foskey due to injuries, and obviously Isaiah was, you know, kind of down in the rotation last year. But, you know, behind Cam Jordan, Carl Granderson, you have three legit options that you're going to try to get on the field, and that's even considering you don't have Tano Passanio, who was supposed to be part of that group. So, I mean, you have a rotation of five pass rushers that you're going to want to get on the field. So it's really just going to be a question of who earns those reps. And, you know, it's going to be a fun competition to watch throughout training camp because, you know, wherever you stack up, wherever you talk about the NASCAR package, kind of the third down pass rush package, stuff like that, it's going to be kind of an interesting chess kind of piece, chessboard, to see how they stack up all of those pieces. And hopefully they're available. That's been the biggest question for the Saints pass rush over the last couple of years.
Well, Jeff, the Saints run game obviously has some question. There is no question, though, to me at least, I don't think anyone either, who's the lead dog in that backfield. It's Alvin Kamara. But man, oh man, things have been, I don't know, eerily quiet since he walked out of the final day of, you know, mandatory minicamp, supposedly over a contract, wanting a new deal worked out with the team, and just haven't heard anything from his camp so far or the Saints at all. There's been no buzz in the social media sphere. Do you expect that we'll get something done before camp starts in 2 weeks, or are we going to expect an AK holdout? I know it's, I think, the second day of camp on the 25th is when he's going to be 29 years old. Will we see the birthday boy in California, or is he going to be MIA?
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice to have one of those Hard Knocks series where they show us all of the in-depth conversations in the
right, yeah,
running back and the GM, right? But yeah, I would be surprised if he holds out because, you know, that's an expensive thing to do these days, right? With the new CBA, it's going to cost you a significant chunk of change, and it's going to create a scenario where, hey, you know, what are you going to do? You know, it's not a situation where you can trade the guy. So it's really a question of, you know, how much hardball would Alvin want to play? How much hardball does the team want to play? I would guess that you come to some kind of an accord. I don't know if it's going to get done prior to camp, but I think something's going to get done one way or the other because it wouldn't make sense for the team or Alvin to really create the scenario where you're questioning, you're accruing fines and you're going into it wondering, okay, is this guy going to be here at all? So I would expect to see him there. Now, how much work does he do? That's another question. We saw C.J. Gardner-Johnson when he was dealing with kind of that contract question.
Right.
He showed up. He just didn't work. And so I think that's more likely of what you might see is if there's anything protracted, it might be kind of a hold-in, if you will. But I don't know. I think that the biggest statement was kind of making it clear that this is a stopping point. Like, this has to get figured out. And I think the team and Alvin are both going to have incentive to get that done. It's just a question of what it looks like.
We talked about Taliese a little bit when we were mentioning the offensive line, Jeff, but the other second-round rookie, obviously Kool-Aid McKinstry, who we didn't really see much at all, especially not in team practices during OTAs and minicamp and everything like that, because he's still recovering from that foot injury. He should be a full go for training camp. That was kind of the report. He should be good to go. What are you kind of looking forward to about seeing him in the black and gold and eventually in pads and everything like that, but how they kind of get him set up at training camp?
Yeah, well, he's going to be, in my opinion, in a kind of a low-end position battle with Alante Taylor in that slot role. I think this team is hopeful. I know Dennis Allen spoke to this. Like, Alante Taylor had his struggles in year one. It was a position that he hadn't really played before. He didn't really play in training camp, right? If you recall, he was competing with Paulson Adebo throughout training camp for that outside corner spot. They ended up going with Paulson. Bradley Roby got the lion's share of the slot reps during training camp last year. He was one of the last cuts. And then it was like, okay, Alante, the slot corner now, after getting second, third team reps all throughout camp. So I think the goal is to get him more of those reps. Like, he's going to be the first team slot corner throughout camp. He's going to have a lot he can learn from. He's going to be going against a defense that gives you trouble in the slot going against an offense that will give you trouble in the slot because you're dealing with a lot of motion and you have to use your eyes, and that's where he was getting beat last year. So I think it's going to be, for Kool-Aid, you're going to be working behind Alante, and it's going to be a question of, okay, is he kind of the second rung on that ladder in the slot? And then you're going to look outside and say, okay, would you rather have Kool-Aid in the slot and Alante as your third outside corner and where you had Ike Adam last year, or would you rather have Alante in the slot back with Kool-Aid backing him up and then also being that third outside corner? So I think that's what you're going to see. You're going to see Kool-Aid getting a bulk of reps in the slot, but also moving outside and kind of seeing what you have from him. One of the biggest impacts I could see from Kool-Aid in his rookie season, at least early on, is in the return game as well. And we have talked a lot about, you know, the new kickoff rule and how it's going to change things. I think you're going to end up seeing him and Rashid Shaheed end up being kind of that duo back there with these combination returns. So that's one thing I'm excited to see as he gets more involved, is how do you use he and Rashid in that role where I don't know if you want to kick it to either of those guys. So teams are going to have to make a decision. But that's early on. I think it's just going to be, okay, get his feet on the ground. How does he look? Where does he look the most comfortable? And you go from there.
Rashid's one of those names that's been popping up a lot with Mike and I recently, Jeff, that we keep talking about. Olave is going to have a gigantic year, and that is the expectation for him to make that leap to stardom in year three if the Saints offense is going to be operating efficiently. But Rashid Shaheed's been kind of under the radar because he is this team's wide receiver too. Now, there is a gap between Olave and Shaheed, but if you're looking at him to make another jump too, like he made a jump from year one to two, maybe he can also kind of make that leap in year three.
Yeah, for Rashid, I think it's a lot more about how he's used necessarily than what he can do. I think when you look at how his season went last year, he was elite at what he did, but his role was pretty limited in that you didn't use him in a lot of screen action. You didn't get him the ball in space. You didn't get him the ball on jet sweeps very often. It was a very simple yet effective role. If you go back to that game against the Colts, I know the Saints tweeted out a highlight package from that game. It's not a long one because he only had three catches, but on those three catches, he went for 153 yards and a touchdown. It was one of the most impactful games you will ever see from a guy who touched the ball three times, at least in the offense. I'm sure he got a return in there as well. So that, to me, if there's a jump for Rashid, I don't think you can be more efficient on the downfield routes than he was last year. But if there's a jump for Rashid, it's going to be, how can you get him the ball close to the line of scrimmage so that he can use those punt return, those kick return skills in space and make people miss? Because I guarantee you, no defense wants to be chasing that guy around. So find a way to do that. Now, you also have to kind of weigh in, okay, he and Chris Olave are kind of sleight of frame guys. We don't have that Michael Thomas-type receiver anymore. So you do have to be more cognizant of, okay, we can't just get this guy the ball over the middle of the field and let him get lit up constantly, because then you'll be trying to figure out, okay, who can do what Rashid can do. But I think when you look at Rashid and what he's been able to do over his first two seasons, you're in the realm of, like, okay, one of the most successful UDFA finds in team history, right? Like, you look at a guy like Lance Moore and you would put him up on that category, but I don't think you're going to find a lot of undrafted guys who have done even remotely close to what he has done over the last two seasons. Like, Marquez Callaway's on that list, but he hasn't been near, he was never as impactful as Rashid has been in terms of taking the top off. Like, he can just do things that is impossible to defend with one guy. And that should make Chris Olave's life a lot easier. And I think what's going to end up happening this season, a lot more than maybe last year, is teams are going to have to they're going to have to pick their poison. They're going to have to make a choice, right? Where do you send that extra attention? Do you send it all at Chris Olave and allow Rashid to go one-on-one on the outside with a guy that you know can't cover him? Or do you just keep the safeties back over the top and let Chris Olave feast over the middle of the field with less attention there. And obviously Alvin Kamara is in that mix as well. So I really like this wide receiver room in terms of the offense you're shifting into, because I keep going back to the Dolphins and the duo of Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and how effective they've been in an offense that the Saints offense is going to look a lot like. And so I think if you can use those two guys the same way, I think you can have a lot of success with them.
Jeff, definitely appreciate the time. Awesome stuff. Definitely gave us some extended time as well, so appreciate you.
No problem, y'all. Take it easy.
That's Saints sideline reporter and WWL digital content producer and my co-host on Inside Black and Gold, Jeff Nowak. You can check out his work at WWL.com and listen to our podcast via the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.